I'm Alexia Ridley with Athens News Matters, a show dedicated to local news, current events, and community outreach efforts. Today, my guests discuss Harry Sims' resignation from the ACC Commission, Clark County joining an opioid lawsuit, rezoning concerns, the latest developments regarding Clayton Street, and the Georgia Supreme Court overturning an Athens man's murder conviction. Those topics and more coming up. Hello, I'm Alexia Ridley, host of Athens News Matters. My guests today are Gwen O'Looney with WXAG, Blake Aud with Flagpole, and District 6 Commissioner Jerry Neesmith. So there's a lot we're talking about, and those are only some of the things that we're going to touch on today. So I guess we'll move right on to kind of a big deal with Harry Sims stepping down from his post so that he can run for mayor.
Yes, Harry Sims, after 25 years on the commission, and before that he was on city council. So he's got a long history of public service, and he is running for mayor. And last night he announced his resignation effective this month from the commission. And the reason he did that was so that qualifying can occur for anybody who wants to run for his post and that will happen during the May election without a special election. I think it's worth saying the reason Kelly Gertz wasn't compelled to resign is because he's in an odd-numbered district. He can serve out his term this year, even if he is running or elected for mayor. But if you're in an even-numbered district, you have to resign when you qualify.
And that's because they have two more years left on their term this
correct.
Year.
That
right.
is very good to
you
know.
Don't want the overlapping of terms is what that law is designed to do. And it's been interesting through the years what the consequences of that law. But
well, one consequence is that speaking as an even number commissioner is you don't want to quit midterm.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just like right now, for instance, our legislature is not allowed to campaign, but our Secretary of State can gather $3 million, you know. So sometimes these fairness things don't look so fair when you look at them from different perspectives.
Right. You know, we're going to miss Harry a lot.
He's been
a great public servant. We're going to miss him a lot. He's added so much to the commission, and he's a very calm and well-thought man and a well-thought-after person. So either having him or Kelly as mayor will be good.
Right, and I don't want to, you know, blow anybody's surprises, so I won't say who, but there are some great people coming out of Harry's district and that he's really proud of to follow him. I think that there is some good feeling about the competition that will occur in that district. Mm.
Yeah, I know one of the candidates who's running is Mark Martin, who's a public school teacher, and I believe there's going to be at least one other person running. A gentleman named Taylor Pass, I think, is running, although I haven't had a chance to talk to him yet, so can't really say much about him. And there may be others. Qualifying is still a month away, so you never know. But
that's right.
it's you know, from what I hear, you know, these we have solid candidates in that district, so
right.
It should be in good hands.
And I think some people really, out of respect for Harry, sat back and waited to make sure of that his decision was a sure thing.
And Harry actually didn't want to run, not the last time, but the time before that. He wanted to retire, but he couldn't find anyone to run in his place. So
that's
he ran for I guess it would have been his fifth term. At that time, so it's
a dutiful public servant.
Indeed.
Yeah. It seems like there's so many people running, not just for mayor, also for commission seats.
Right, yeah. I don't think that I've ever seen this much activity as far as local politics goes, where, you know, really, you know, and there's a I don't know who yet, but supposedly there's a District 1 candidate that is going to announce at some point here in the next couple days, so that would mean every seat on the commission is going to be contested, as well as the mayor. And who knows, you know, there are five or six people in the mayor's race already, and, you know, you don't know who else is going to get in. But I think that's going to be there's going to be a lot of competition for that. But you would have to consider Harry and Kelly, I think, given their name recognition and their record of service, that you would have to consider them to be definitely the front runners.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me. that, you know, our community is very politically active, and we have always, I mean, for unification, we had 34 candidates running, so I don't think we'll ever see that again. But on a consistent basis, we have a good competitive interest in our commission and county seats.
But, you know, 4 years ago, there was no one. No one contested any of the commission seats.
Right, which is...
That was 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Yeah. I mean, yeah, excuse
Can
me.
Be positive. I mean, you know.
14, there was an open seat, I believe. But, yeah, 16, no one ran against anyone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What a difference in just 2 years to go from nobody contesting the seats to almost every seat being contested and several candidates for mayor.
Yeah.
Well.
Well, and, I mean, not even just the local races. I mean, you can look at... Obviously, the state house special elections where nobody had run for those seats in at least 6-8 years, you know, and then there are two state senators are being challenged, or at least one of them, you know, I don't know about the other, but I think someone will end up running against Bill Couser. We have at least 5 people running for Congress at the moment against Jody Heiss, so... That's a long ballot. I mean, I've never seen, you know, and these are, a lot of these races are races that, you know, I mean, they were uncontested for so long because they were just a foregone conclusion. But I think what we saw with the special election in November, obviously foregone conclusions aren't foregone anymore. So
that's good.
If you enter, you have a chance to win.
Yeah.
But you need to enter. People need to enter. So we'll stick with the commission, some commission business, that is. The commission has joined an opioid lawsuit.
Yes, this was released today. It's not a secret anymore. There's a national lawsuit that's being joined by lots of local governments. I believe it's going to take trial in a federal court in Ohio, as I recall. And it's against the opioid manufacturers and distributors trying to recover the damages that have been done by, well, for manufacturers, it's the manufacturers aggressively pushed highly addictive, dangerous opioids falsely representing to doctors that patients would only rarely succumb to drug addiction. They aggressively advertised to and persuaded doctors to prescribe highly addictive, dangerous opioids, turned patients into drug addicts for their own profit. It was intentional and unlawful. And to the distributors, for much the same, basically, they unlawfully breached their legal duties under federal and state law to monitor, detect, and investigate, refuse, and report suspicious orders of prescription opiates. So if this is being represented by Patrick Gerard of Blessing Game, Birch, Ashley, and Gerard on a contingency basis, so there's no expense to us. If we win, then that money will go toward drug treatment programs such as those that are done by Advantage Behavioral Health here locally.
I know there are some other Georgia counties also
yes.
involved in lawsuits for similar claims.
Right. Well, the local attorneys are out actively recruiting local governments to join in this lawsuit. So we're just one of several. I don't know what others have decided to join, but I think there are some jurisdictions right around us who are joining as well.
And I'm guessing it's to recoup the losses because of having to get the drug to revive people.
Well, it's all of the public service costs, incarceration, prosecution, treatment, diversion, all those things are what they're computing as costs.
Well, how do you quantify those costs?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not doubting that it is a cost, but you know, how do you put a number on that?
I'm sure they're gathering the numbers now, so I don't know.
That's what I was just going to ask, is how that information is being gathered. But I think accountability has to be applied to anyone that is producing products that are supposed to help you and then hurt you. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, I think the transgression here, the alleged transgression, is that they were promoting the use of the drugs inappropriately and then not monitoring their use or reporting suspicious drug purchases.
And also not really taking into account how addictive those drugs ended up being if you stayed on them for any length of time.
Right, yeah. Well, my daughter's a nurse practitioner, and I won't go into too much detail except to say that she was once in the position of prescribing drugs for a chiropractor. It's not local. And she did that for about 6 months and got out. She said, this ain't right. There's something bad going on here. And she was right.
Right.
I imagine it'll be pretty quiet for a while.
Yes, because they're compiling those numbers.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You got to find that smoking gun, the memo that really shows that
I think the smoking gun is the advertising itself, and then the fact that the drugs were being widely prescribed at numbers that were beyond reason.
We did used to be a pill mill state.
They've got to show that they knew that addiction rates were much higher than they were saying in order.
I think they got to show that the way they were advertising and promoting the drugs was incorrect.
Well, that didn't work for tobacco.
But tobacco never admitted that it was harmful. We know opioids are harmful and addictive. We don't have to prove that.
Well, okay. This seems to be all around the country. People are fighting back, which is unusual to me. You know,
I think it's great. Good spirit.
We'll move on to some other county business, and that is Clayton Street. There's some developments there.
Yes, last night our chambers were full. A few people spoke, but they were represented to discuss Clayton Street. And what they were asking for, this is the street where we're going to spend about $12 or $13 million, tearing the street down, way down, to replace the infrastructure, the sewer, the water, whatever else is down there. And then putting new sidewalks and streetscape. What the merchants were asking for was for us to delay the beginning of this project until January 1st of 2019, to work on it for 9 months before the football season, and stop, and then restart in January of 2020, hopefully not having to go for another 9 months. That's what they're asking us to consider. So the questions are, is that feasible? Is there a way to time the construction so that we can stop construction 9 months into it, bring things back to a fully accessible street to the merchants, and then start back up again? That's the question we have to get.
That seems fairly difficult, but I don't understand how
it
works, so maybe it's not.
It's not something that we had ever talked about in any kind of detail, so I think we're going to have to do our diligence on that.
Well, that's... That's kind of the interesting thing to me, is that was not even presented as an option when y'all had your work session and you were talking about the timing of this, you know, and it was just for background for the listener, it was originally scheduled, I think, to start in August, and then there was a push to move that up, I think, to May to avoid having to go through two football seasons to wrap it up before the 29 football season started in August of 2019. So, but it seemed to me at the time that should have been an option, you know, waiting until January. And I don't know if you can stop and then start again. That's a question for the engineers. But, you know, this was never even brought up at the time when this was discussed, and it seemed to me like if it were possible that would have been an obvious solution.
Our goal has been to start as soon as possible so that we have more chance of finishing it without any longer interruption as we can. That's one of the reasons we're going to borrow $8 million on a line of credit for T-SPLOS so that we can start this project. We want to start it right away. That's been the goal.
But I guess I don't really understand why this project has been on the books since 2004, 2005. So, you know, we've waited almost 15 years. I don't understand what another 6 months is, you know?
Right. And I'll tell you, I can't think of any other business in the world that would not schedule this kind of disruption away from its most profitable season.
Well, if it's going to take 16 months, you're going to have to do it during football season unless you can stop and start. But we don't know the answer to that, I guess, right.
Just saying that the question should have been asked, like you. Why wasn't this schedule ever looked at before? It's sad to me that our merchants have to ask us to look at it. You know, let's go back and be a good business and making sure that they can do the best business And I think they're reasonable. If it's impossible or it costs an extraordinarily high amount or whatever, then but at least they know that you've thought about them.
Well, there's a, I agree with you, but there's a lot of moving parts here. For example, we're going to have to lease a lot of the equipment that we're going to use for this project. So this would extend that lease by a number of months, which adds to the expense. For example, that's one complication that comes to my head immediately.
I think this also raises the issue, the fact that there were, I think, 29, 30 business owners who signed this petition. Mm-hmm. That raises the issue again of, was there adequate communication with the business owners on Clayton Street, you know, for them to come back, you know, a couple months later and propose this? You know, I think that sort of indicates that they probably really weren't given adequate opportunity, you know, to learn about this project and to comment on it and to give input.
Well, this idea probably came from Russell Edwards. It wasn't.
Well, he was one of the people involved with gathering these signatures.
Well,
sure,
yeah, he's a merchant too. His wife owns a business there, so it is odd that nobody thought about this before and considered it. But that's where we are.
Right. You know, what's been so sad to me about the many spilots that have been approved for downtown is that we've never seen any real change or improvement in downtown. It's always been underground, any changes. And I know downtown is our oldest part of the city, and so therefore it's got a lot that needs to be upgraded, I'm sure. But the reality is that any move like this, I think, should make sure that people are aware of a change instead of it all being underground, you know.
When you say underground, you're talking about the work or the...
I'm talking about infrastructure. Yeah, I mean, it's always totally focused on infrastructure when it's sold.
That's because you don't tear up a street to beautify it. When you've got infrastructure, you're going to have to go down and tear up again to fix, and that's where we are. You got to fix the infrastructure. So anyway, the commissioners, we have not talked about this option among ourselves,
right,
at least in any conversations. Certainly not any formal conversation.
Is this going to be considered? Are y'all even?
Well, it's kind of up to the mayor at this point, really.
She's the one who's got to put it on the agenda.
Yeah.
Back on the agenda.
Yeah. I mean, we can raise heck about it if there's a will to do that, and I don't know if there is or not. My mind is open. I'd like to talk about it.
Right. Why? I think that our merchants would greatly appreciate
sure
your consideration of their, you know, request.
I agree.
Well, we know we'll be talking about Clayton Street.
Oh, yeah. Again.
Yeah, not too long from now,
yeah,
we'll be talking about Clayton Street.
Exactly.
We also wanted to speak about, I know there's a couple more things we're going to talk about with the what's going on locally, but there is also something, Gwen, we want to discuss about the Georgia Supreme Court,
right,
overturning an Athens man's murder conviction.
That's right. Back in 2014, Super Bowl Sunday, a confrontation occurred over sharing of pork skins, and a man died. And our courts convicted him of that murder. And that conviction was unanimously...
Convicted Melvin Brown.
Yes, Melvin, yes. Lewis Brown, right, who was 29, I think, at the time of the... and the Georgia Supreme Court has overturned that unanimously, which is really an indictment that we made a major mistake in allowing information about two former incidents to be considered. And I just think that's...
He had shot two people previously in two separate incidents.
And that's right.
That was allowed. Right. The jury was allowed to learn that.
Right.
But usually prior convictions of that nature are not
admissible
evidence.
Yes. Right. I mean, everybody knows that, that's watched TV or been to court. So anyway, I just think that's an important thing. It's an embarrassment. That's one of the first blights on our justice system I've ever seen, and it concerned me greatly that happened. And so, But while I am worried about that, I'll give a shout out and congratulations to the Clark Oconee Tennis Association. That these guys are 65 and older, and they started out together. They worked hard, and they went to the regionals, and then went to the state and beat Atlanta hands down, and then they went to the regionals and beat Alabama. They're one of our few teams that beat Alabama this year. And I'm just really proud of them that they won the national championship. And I think that, the reason I'm kind of shouting out is because it hasn't received any publicity. And I think things like that, that we're beginning to see a lack of community reporting in our news. So
I think it's worth saying, though, that we've got two reporters here, and they weren't informed about it either. So there's a miscommunication going on.
And I don't know how that publicity, what the Clark, how that goes. But I know that the Online Athens has been really campaigned to get some notice. So anyway, I think it's wonderful, and I think we should all be proud of them.
Yes.
It is some good news.
And they used that new tennis center well, didn't they?
That's right, the new tennis center, right.
So congrats to them. And we are going to move back to Jerry because you have a couple other items that you're bringing up. Now, did we touch on rezoning? We did not.
No, we didn't.
Nah. We've got some more.
Yeah, and Blake can help me out on this. He and Rebecca McCarthy put an excellent article in Flagpole today. It came out about these two rezonings. One is
good job, Blake.
With the wrong photo, though.
Oh, well.
I put an old rendering of this development in the paper.
He's talking about the
outdated rendering. Yeah, so you'll see the correct one next week.
The Episcopal House Dormitory on Lumpkin Street, which came to us one time before with one design. The university was vehemently against it in terms of its mass and traffic issues. And we did not, adopt that rezoning. So they've gone back to the drawing board, gone back to the negotiating table, have a completely new design. But there's still a little catch, and that is that they want to use, is it University Court? Is that the name of that street? I think it is.
Yes.
It goes beside it, which is University.
It's just a little dead-end street. Right
yeah,
there,
University yeah. property. And so they've asked the university to give them a 50-year right-of-way on that street to have a second entrance, one off of Lumpkin and one off of University Court. Well, that's got to go to Board of Regents for approval, and that's called Option A in their proposal. Option B, if that doesn't happen, is to have one entrance on Lumpkin Street, which is probably not going to earn the
approval
of the University of Georgia. So we're going to have to wait and see which option comes before the mayor and commission before we can really think much about it.
And the university has been dead set against this ever since it was proposed. The traffic and safety is the reason that's given, but you have to wonder if they're if they want that property for themselves, considering its location.
Yeah, I mean that's possible. They certainly deny that that's a motivator. I think it's complex. Let's just say that we'll wait and see what the university says. I think they seem to be bending toward option A in approving it or.
And that would be the one that the regents would have to approve.
Correct.
And that is compliant with the comp plan, in town, the dorm, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other is a new subdivision being proposed, and this is the second time that this has been done too. This is right at the intersection of Timothy and Ipsbridge Parkway. Back behind an older neighborhood there. It's zoned RS-25, which is a pretty low density. And they're asking for an RS-8, which is a very high density, and for a planned development. The only difference is that they have gotten the Baptist Church there on Ipsbridge Parkway to give them the rights to put in a driveway on Ipsbridge Parkway to enter into this neighborhood, still using the other entrances through the older neighborhood. So the issues are traffic, its impact on existing neighborhoods, and the effect on the values of the existing single-family homes that are all in RS-25 zoning district. So this is in my Canby's district, and he and I communicate about this a lot. And right now we're keeping our ears open. There's a lot of resistance to it by the neighbors, a lot. And so we'll just see.
All right.
Well, my question about this really, beyond the issues with the neighbors is, they're talking about these houses going for in the $300,000 range. RS-8, to put that kind of in terms that people can understand, that's a small lot. That's like a sixth of an acre probably lot.
I think so.
So you're talking about, houses that are, not a lot of land, very close together. A, why would you have to charge so much if you're going to do it, on these tiny lots? And B, who is this for? Is this just going to be more people moving here from out of town, or?
Well, the developer claims it's
right,
for 55
right.
and older, but there's nothing
But retirees in Clark County cannot afford a house of that cost.
Yeah, but if you look at who's coming in, it's not retirees from Athens-Clark.
No.
It's people from all over the country that have sold houses in New York and California,
I understand that, and that's what
they
I'm saying, is that, this is not something that is going to necessarily benefit people who live here now.
Right. I'm wondering, in the comp plan, it talks about a different kind of a lower density residential that is next to commercial. And I didn't really understand that at all, but I wondered if it was the kind of situation that we have here that we're trying to avoid with that. Do you understand the comp plan proposal at all?
Well, I understand the concept of less dense housing between the commercial corridor and then the lower density housing behind it.
It was talking about a less dense category of multifamily housing that could serve as a buffer.
Right. Gotcha.
Someplace like Broad Street where you would have kind of a heavy commercial use.
Right.
Then you would have a multifamily that was less dense than our current zoning categories in between the commercial and the single family.
The multifamily. But, we need to look at that development that's at Lumpkin and Greenwood, is it, where those attached housings are in there. There's a whole bunch. John Barrow had to fight for that, and he kept saying, you don't understand what we're trying to do. But that is a perfect example. Those things are reselling for $400,000 and $500,000, and they were sold originally for like $250,000, $225,000.
Yeah, I think those are condominiums, aren't they?
They're all owner attached. Occupied,
yeah, but
just
they're
about.
Condominiums.
Yeah.
Just one fine point, just to get the density right. RS-25 is 1.4 units per acre, and RS-8 is 3.8 units per acre.
So. All right. We are going to leave it there. I do want to thank my guests, Gwen O'Looney, Blake Odd, and District 6 Commissioner Jerry Neesmith. To hear this show again, visit WUGA.org for a podcast. For questions or comments, visit our Facebook page. This show does not reflect the views of the station, Flagpole, or WXAG. Athens News Matters is a production of WUGA, a broadcast service of the University of Georgia. I'm Alexia Ridley.